left off last week, we were discussing what exactly the nature of the prohibition is of benefiting from a law that was done on Shabbos. And that question really breaks down to two different categories. There's a question of if a Jew does a law on Shabbos, there's a question of a non-Jew does a law on Shabbos. If a non-Jew does a law on Shabbos, then the prohibition would only apply if it's done on behalf of the Jew. But if that would be the case, then we would have a real issur. So what is the nature of these two issurim? So we pointed out there seems to be a running machlokes in Rishon, the Rashi, and Tosfos, just what exactly is the problem. So Rashi, in a few places, writes that the underlying principle involved is that you're being nenem the issur Shabbos. So that in and of itself is problematic. Just the mere fact that you are benefiting from a melacha that was done, that itself is a problem in Shabbos. It's a chiddush in Rashi because in the case where the non-Jew did it, the non-Jew is allowed to do melacha on Shabbos. Okay, for example, yesterday's pasha is supposed to do melacha. Lo yishbos who goy is not supposed to do Shabbos. And nevertheless, it's still considered to be somehow a nikwa chilul Shabbos. In a strange way, it's still considered to be an act of chilul Shabbos. And therefore, the Jew who benefits of it from it would be being nenem in melacha Shabbos. And Tosfos seems to ignore that whole thing. Tosfos says, that's not true. There is no such concept called anything wrong with being nenem in Shabbos. It's a much more practical concern, says Tosfos. It's a very esoteric kind of a concern. But it tells us it's very, very down to earth. The reason why you can't benefit from a Jew doing melacha is a simple knas. That we want to penalize you because you did something wrong, not all that different than the person who owns chametz on Pesach. We won't let you eat the chametz afterwards, the chametz on Pesach. Very often in halacha we find you did something wrong, you have to pay for it, that's going to cost you. Hopefully there's a deterrent that to do in the future. The reason why we don't want you to benefit from a non-Jew's halacha, not because the non-Jew did anything wrong, we don't make a knas on the non-Jew, but the reason is very simple, very down to earth, very practical. We're afraid that if you start to use the halachas done by the guy, the next thing you know is you're going to ask the flu for you. The guy turns on the light field and says, hey, this is really good. What a great idea to have a Shabbos guy. So next week, you'll ask the guy to turn on the light, which you're not supposed to do. That would be a violation of the Yaakov. So according to Rashi, there's one underlying principle of Hanor. According to Tosfos, it's case by case. And we're trying to accomplish certain things. Either trying to make a knas, trying to serve as a deterrent, trying to prevent you from doing things in the future. Are there any real differences in halacha? Does it make much of a difference? Or there are a few important potential differences in halacha. We mentioned at the end of the show last week that there is a concept called B'chdesh Ya'asu. That the Gemara, at least in the context of a non-Jew, the Gemara talks about the issue of L'chdesh Ya'asu. It's not enough just to wait until Shabbos is over, but you have to wait until enough time has elapsed before the Malacha could have theoretically be done. Okay, to turn the light doesn't take all that much time, but to build something with other things can take a long time. So the Gemara says in the Sefer Shabbos that if a Goy does a Malacha for you on Shabbos, it's not enough to wait till Shabbos is over. You have to wait L'chdesh Ya'asu. So Rashi on the spot says, and why is that? Rashi explains, because otherwise that's called being menem Shabbos. If enough time has elapsed that the goy could theoretically have done it after Shabbos, even though Lamaisi did it on Shabbos, so we'll view that as being menem from after Shabbos. Even though, practically speaking, the melacha did happen on Shabbos, but we no longer call that being menem in melacha Shabbos. According to Rashi, that window of L'chdesh Ya'asu, which could be either a second or could be 3 hours, that window is necessary to offset any concern of Hanah. And therefore, according to Rashi, as Rashi himself writes, that would be equally true even when a Jew does melacha. So if a Jew does melacha on Shabbos, you also have to wait for L'chdesh Ya'asu. And Tosfos disagrees with that. Tosfos says they never heard this story. Tosfos says that the idea of L'chdesh Ya'asu only applies in the case of a non-Jew for a very real reason. And the reason is because otherwise we're afraid you're going to ask the goy to do melacha for you. If I know that I can get something, that I can use the item right after Shabbos, so it's worth my while to ask the non-Jew to do it on Shabbos itself. If I know anyway I'm going to have to wait till for an hour after Shabbos, so it's not worth it, why should I do it on a favor? I'm not going to benefit from it anyway. So according to Tosfos, L'chdesh Ya'asu was built dafka into the category of a goy doing melacha for you, but it has no relevance to a Jew doing melacha for you. If a Jew does melacha for you on Shabbos, what are we afraid? We're going to ask the Jew to do melacha on Shabbos for you? That's crazy. Those guys are going to do that. So therefore, comes out a strange thing, according to Tosfos. The whole principle of L'chdesh Ya'asu is only in the less severe problem. In the case of the goy, when we're really, really nervous, you can ask the goy to make those Dunkin' Donuts for you on Shabbos. So then we can tell you have to wait for L'chdesh Ya'asu. We still didn't figure out, anyone do the research, find out how long it takes to make the donuts? Okay, I assume by Sunday morning, even if it's about 8:08 in the morning, okay, I think it's L'chdesh Ya'asu to make a couple of donuts.
I would wake up all times at night.
What?
The guy used to wake up at all times of the night.
Okay, it's okay. Ishtalach of donuts. But when a Jew does melacha, then tells us also no need to wait L'chdesh Ya'asu. So that's already machloek, that's already enough to do. So there is a fascinating discussion that took place in the Middle Ages that Rashi presents to us, one of the most, I always find one of the most fascinating Rashi in all Shas, where Rashi tells you a story, a whole Shaila, a whole Mahalach. That's why some of you might wonder why I pulled out the Gemara, because I can never do justice to the story without reading it inside, where Rashi quotes in a whole back and forth, a whole pilpul, about a Shaila v'chdeshi yasu, which ultimately revolves around this very Shaila. The question that Rashi raises is as follows. The Gemara says explicitly that if a goy does something for you on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, you have to wear v'chdeshi yasu. And let's take the case of Yom Tov. If he does a malacha for you on the first day of Yom Tov, so then obviously you have to wait b'chadesh yasu. What does b'chadesh yasu mean? Does b'chadesh yasu mean to the end of after Yom Tov Rishon? Or does b'chadesh yasu mean until the after Yom Tov Sheni? That's a big enough community of 24 hours. How long do you have to wait? A shayla halacha like this happens. These shaylas do happen. And some of you may remember, I spoke about this, I think, on a Rosh Hashanah. Somebody had sent some clothing to the cleaners. There was a whole mix-up, and they ended up doing the clothing on Shabbat, on Yom Tov. And so the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the guy finds a suit sitting on his porch or something. There's a whole convoluted shayla about whether he has to wait one day, wait 2 days, Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Tov, Sheni, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Arichta. Very, very complicated story. So I think we gave a whole shiur about this one a couple of years ago back on Rosh Hashanah. So comes Rashi and says, it's nira lomar as a dover poshet ad ma'od that you do not have to wait until Motzo Yom Tov Sheni. I'll tell you why, says Rashi. He says, what's the problem? The whole issue of Bechdei Shiasu is just to make sure that you're not being nene mimalochas Yom Tov, or nene mimalochas Shabbos. Makes Rashi a very, very simple calculation. If a goy does a malach of you on the first day, once Bechdei Shiasu has passed into Yom Tov Sheni, so then you're not being nene mimalochas Yom Tov. I'll tell you why, very simple. What is Yom Tov? Which day is the right day of Yom Tov? If the real day of Yom Tov is the first day of Yom Tov, so then once the first day is over, Bechdei Shiasu has passed, so it's over, finished, I'm not being nene. If you tell me that the second day of Yom Tov is the real day, because again, we don't know what the day is, so if, or at least we didn't at one time know what the day is, if the second day is the real day of Yom Tov, then guess what? The malacha wasn't done on Yom Tov, today was Erev Yom Tov. So Rashi says, no matter which way you turn, no matter what the svar is, you pick your day. You can't have both, unless it's Rosh Hashanah. You can't have both. Either one is the real Yom Tov, or the second day is the real Yom Tov. If the first day is the real Yom Tov, the Shiasu has long passed. If the second day is the real Yom Tov, then no malacha was done in the first place. So Rashi writes, based on his understanding of the Chnei Shiasu, no one could have ever dreamt of insisting on waiting for a full 24 hours afterwards, until the Balei Tosfos came along. The Balei Tosfos says, no, you have to wait the entire 24 hours of Yom Tov Sheni. Why? Very simple question. Taisa says, Bechdei Shiasu is not so esoteric, it's not so lumdish. It's simply to make sure that a guy doesn't do something funny, doesn't do something fishy. If you're going to tell me that the guy could use it into the second night of Yom Tov, if you know what's going to happen next week at Shmini Atzeres, the guy's going to ask the guy to do a malacha, so that it'll happen already, Fakofas, for Simchus Torah. So according to Taisa, Bechdei Shiasu is just simply a way to make sure that a guy's not going to violate Emir Yaakov. Of course he'll violate Emir Yaakov under these circumstances. Of course he has an incentive to violate Emir Yaakov, because by doing so he'll get it 24 hours earlier than he would have gotten otherwise. So Rashi is learning about the Shiasu in a very, very lumbish way, and therefore Rashi is saying it's a question of Hano. So the Mon of Shaft is no Hano, because he's the first day Yom Tov, second day Yom Tov. Going to tell us this, the Shiasu is much more practical down to earth, and therefore if you're going to gain something practical, then it's going to be also. So with that background, now Rashi tells you the following story. Rashi tells you, it's a Rashi that appears in Masechet Beit and now called Dalet Amud Beis. So Rashi says, he raises the question, the Gemara talks a little bit about it, and then Rashi raises the question, and he says that he has Rayas Harbe. He has a lot of Rayas that it's Mutter, what he just said, but, now you get the personal side of Rashi, V'lo zachisi lishol espi Rabbeinu Yaakov b'davar zeh. He said, I never had this opportunity, I never asked my Rebbe, one of the Rebbe was Rabbeinu Yaakov, he said, I never asked him this question. Why did I not ask him this question? Rashi gives you a whole background why. Because he saw people were relying on this. He thought it was mutter. He saw people were actually doing this. Shilas really happened. Going to do things on the first day Yom Tov. And then the minhag hamakom was that it was okay. He said it was so obvious that it was mutter. I didn't bother the Rebbe. But he sees. You shouldn't bother the Rebbe. It's poshut. You think it's the hell of a... If you think it's poshut, if you think you know it's in it, so don't bother the Rebbe. But now it happened. After his Rebbe died, that's going to be a whole story, a whole drama. After his Rebbe died, Shemati as Rebbeinu Yitzchak Alevi Shu Oser, Adleel Motzoi Yom Tov Sheni. I heard that his other Rebbe, after Rebbeinu Yaakov was his original Rebbe, after he died, so then he went to learn Rebbeinu Yitzchak Alevi, And everybody heard from Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi that he was taka asering it. Because Anshe Iro Kamoisai. And he heard that the entire city, all the rabbonim in town, I don't remember which town, I know Rashi was born in Troyes, and then he went to Worms to learn, and he came back to France. I don't know all the nuances of exactly which town he's referring to, but all the entire town of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak's later Rebbe in life, answered it. So Rashi starts to get heavy and horny, he had a little cold feet. I used to think it was so mutter. I never bothered asking the Rebbe, and I found out the other Rebbe answered it. And then he says, oh, yeah, yeah, begam halachas gedolos asum kein. Then he saw the Baal Halachas Gedolos, which was a work already back in the days of the Gaonim, also asked it. Rashi is starting to feel isolated over here. The Danti Lafonov. So I decided to bring it up to my Rebbe, to Rebbe Yitzchak. I tried to bring the Raya's. He tried to show me Raya from Gwen Erevin, and Gwen Beitza, back and forth and back and forth. Falo, holy Hadavar. It didn't work. He said, I couldn't convince my Rebbe to change his mind. And he says, the Rebbe's whole raya, the whole time, he knows what his raya is. And he didn't think the raya was such a great raya. Back and forth and back and forth. And then Rashi is like devastated. Like, he thought it was mutter. He never bothered asking his older Rebbe. His younger Rebbe said it's also. What do? He skips a few lines. He says, ah, now I got the upper hand. In Rebbeinu Gershom's tshuva, as I found like me, and guess what? Rebbeinu Gershom was the Rebbe of both of his Rebbeim. So Rashi says, I just went back a generation. Again, this is before the internet, before no one's Google, no that. He's looking, he's searching Rashi. You can see Rashi's getting frantic, he's getting very nervous, and he's trying to find the source. Now comes the fascinating, the most fascinating part. Come at the boy Eli Michtav. He got a letter. It's Rashi. Rashi will tell you, got a letter. Now again, this is not, you think I was getting an email. Like, yeah, got a letter. I mean, someone, the Pony Express, came running in, you know, this letter could have been taken 10 years to be delivered. Mirger Mais, from Vermeisa, from Vermeisa. Shabolasham, that somebody arrived in Vermeisa. Like the big day. Someone arrived, that was one of the biggest sheep of the big towns in Germany. So late in Nebuch, we read in the Kiddush on Tisha B'Av about the destruction. Vermeisa was destroyed during the Crusades. But that's what Rashi had. Rashi was a young Talmid Chacham, young Sheba Bachar in Vermeisa. Shabolasham Adam Godol Zokeid. An older man arrived. The Yeshiv be Yeshiva in Roma. I was getting international saga. He came from Rome. He said, a great Talmid Chacham had arrived, an older man from Rome, Ushmo Rabbi Kleinimus. His name is Rabbi Kleinimus. And the next three words are the most telltale of the whole story. Ubaki Bekol Hashas. Now, this is Rashi's comment. This is not me. This is not like a 10-year-old saying, hey, he knows everything. No, Rashi's comment. He was Baki. Imagine what it took Rashi to say such a thing about somebody. He was Baki B'chol Hashas. For Horakeh. And he paskin like me. For Nechlechem. And he argued with all the Chachmei Ramayza. And Rashi's like sitting there in Troy, back in France, you know, reading this letter that just arrived in the Pony Express. I think, you know, 10 years till it made its way from Germany. Just, like me. And then the Rashi ends. And now, notwithstanding that, Rashi's own great-grandchildren, the Re, this Tosfos says, no, the Elta Zayin is not right, the other Rabbanim are right, and it's Tach Asa. I can't differentiate Rashi. So again, you see a very human side Rashi don't always get, that Rashi also was bothered. Rashi also had dangers. Rashi also, you know, felt bad that his Rebbeim arguing with him, and back and forth, and back and forth, and he found solace in the fact that Adam Godel from Rome, someone from Rome had arrived, it was a Bakim B'chol Hashas. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know anything about this Rebbeinu Kleinimus. I don't know who he was. I don't know what he was. There are many, many Rebbeinu Kleinimus. It was a very common name in those days. I don't know who he was, but we know there was somebody out there in the Middle Ages who Rashi considered to be Bakim B'chol Hashas. Okay, back to our story. So that's the Machlekes of Yom. That's exactly the Machlekes. So in Shulchan Aruch. Machlekes was done the first day, right? Right. Then we probably pass it, it's okay, like Rashi. But again, fascinating background. Anyway, get back to that story. So again, we're still trying to understand what the nature of this whole Isser of Maaseh Shabbos is all about. Is Maaseh Shabbos rooted in some esoteric Nehen and Mimlecha Shabbos? Or is Maaseh Shabbos more down to earth? It's a Kenas, it's a Gezeirah, etc. So there is a very, very important Shabbos that comes up, a very, very common Shabbos that comes up. Bizman Hazeh, about what would the din be if malacha is done to an item, but the malacha doesn't infect the item, doesn't impact the item. The malacha was done with the item, but it didn't really create the item, didn't improve the item, didn't really change the item per se. So the case is that the Gemara speaks about Havashol the Shabbos. That's pretty impacted. If you cook chicken on Shabbos, you're the girl, the Jew, that's a serious problem. But what if a malacha such as hotzah was done to an item? Something was carried. It wasn't fixed. It wasn't changed. It wasn't created. The light wasn't turned on. An item ended up being shipped in a truck or something. Is that called Maaseh Shabbos altogether? So the truth is, I needed the malacha to happen for me to get the item. Otherwise, the item is sitting in some post office, in some UPS place in the middle of nowhere. So a malacha happened to get that item. At the end of the day, the malacha didn't impact, didn't really change, didn't affect the outcome of the item per se. Is that a problem altogether? That's a big machlokes rishonim. So the Rashba quotes in the name of his Rebbe, the name of Rabbi Yonah, who thought that that wasn't the problem. That Maaseh Shabbos only applies when there's a real change in the item, and many, many other Rishonim disagree with that. What's the shaila? What's the issue? So it sounds like it's really a repeat of the same shaila. Namely, if you believe that Maaseh Shabbos is really a function of being nene min hamalacha, you could argue, but mende from a mumer, when do I say I'm nene from the cooked food? I'm nene from the turned on light. But I'm not nene from the hotzah. The hotzah didn't do anything. In fact, didn't change the item at all. But if you say that the nature of Maaseh Shabbos is it's a knas because somebody did something wrong, or it's a way to prevent something happening in the future, there's no difference in terms of degree of malacha, whether I cooked or whether I drove a truck. It's the same malacha. It's the same, I mean, different malacha, but they both assume they're isa. So then the din of Maaseh Shabbos would kick in. I used to get these shaylas, fairly, fairly common. I used to get them from, there was a Rav who was on one of the college campuses, used to call me about this shayla all the time. He was running, I think this was pre-JLRC days, he was running whatever Shabbos programs ever he was running, and there were people who are not as Shematah Mitzvahs who would come, and not only would they come, they'd bring food. They'd bring food, they'd bring candy platters, they'd bring bottles of wine, whatever, they were bringing cakes. And the Frum kids wanted to know, are we allowed to eat this food on Shabbos? So these people were carrying, it was out of the Arab, they were usually driving, so the other malachas thrown in. On the other hand, the food was the same food. Nothing had really changed in terms of the food per se. So this was an ongoing shayla, so I used to give the ongoing answer that according to most of the Rishonim, it's not acceptable. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that one is supposed to be machmir in this, and the certain extenuating circumstances, again, I left it up to his discretion to decide what the extenuating circumstances are. Most of the posts come up that this is a potential problem, and there are some who will make a lift. These kinds of malachas that don't change the item per se may not be subject to Maaseh Shabbos.
But you can use it like the next day. Like,
yeah, after Shabbos. Yeah, after Shabbos. Okay.
Just going back regarding the Maaseh Shabbos in terms of the light, though. So, regarding, I know the sorry, not Rachel, so if one cooks a food and you can't use it for 24 hours, but if the light, one turns on a light, so then technically.
So you have to wait till after Shabbos is over, and then wait the Chedesh Yasa, the amount of time it takes to turn on a light, which is about a second.
Right, but those who would be machmir for 24 hours, right, we don't pass on like that. We literally say you can't turn on the light for.
No, that would be on Yontif. I mean, on Yontif. Shame. Yeah. I mean, you're right, right. According to Tosis, according to those machmir, they would say that if a goy turns on a light for you on Yontif Rishon, you wouldn't be able to use that light until Matzoy, right. Until Matzoy, you have the shame, right.
Is there a practical application for Amazon and other packages that deliver themselves?
Yeah, so this is a problem. So the question is, a lot of these packages, there are multiple issues with the packages. There are issues of using the item. The question is, are there muktzah issues, etc. So generally speaking as follows, these packages that arrive in Shabbos are probably not such a good idea to use. That they may be a problem with Maaseh Shabbos in terms of actually using the items. Most people don't want to usually literally use the context of the item. It's usually a question sitting on the doorstep. I want to move it in or something. So if the item itself is a muktzah item, then obviously it has to be treated as muktzah. If the item itself is not a muktzah item, then just because it was delivered, and even though it's bar mechutz l'tchum, doesn't really make it into muktzah. For a technical reason, it's all within Dalai Lama's because it's still within a neighbor in town. So the bottom line is that if the package itself is not a muktzah item, mikra dinah can really be moved in. If there's any concern that the item is muktzah proper, so then one could just kick it in, like any no worse than any muktzah. But in terms of, first of all, opening the package itself is a problem, and to open the package itself, using the contents, so that would be a potential problem, according to many posts.
Invite someone Jewish, they drive 3 miles.
And they bring a bottle of wine.
Is that
yeah.
really nice to Shabbos? They could have walked.
Yes, that's the Shabbos, but the mice, they carried and they drove. So at the end of the day, I mean, unless they drove from within the area. So it's better not to use that wine. And again, if one feels that there's like unbelievable tzarif that they have to use that wine, so there are some Rishonim who hold it. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that the Chayadim, like some posts will make a Mishnah Simchah to use it.
Sorry, just follow up. So, Haggard, what about like a full and strong delivery, like on Yom Kippur and Shabbos?
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah, it's probably better not to use that water on Shabbos.
Is that related to the newspaper shayla?
Newspaper. According from Tosis, we call that Mia Layada Rimihita Likro Bedvaram Elubin during the week. But newspapers are a few shadows, a couple of issues. There was a potential issue of Maisa Shabbos in newspapers, although it's not clear that's even called Maisa Shabbos. So, I think, where's Richard? You did the research for me once, right, about the Bergen Record that you came out that just because there are 100 subscribers doesn't mean that there are any extra newspapers that are being printed. There's a people the Post can have is that if I sign up for a certain newspaper, is that considered to be, I'm causing them to do a malacha? So is it a Miriel Yaakov Shaila? Am I allowed to sign up for a subscription? Is that tantamount to asking the guy to print the newspaper for me in Shabbos? So the conclusion that Richie did for me years ago was, it doesn't seem to be that way. It doesn't seem to be an exact correlation between your subscription and that. I remember years ago, we lived in Paramus, so the Burger Rep, we never used to get the newspaper, but on Sunday it had all the coupons. So the coupons were worth like 25 times more than the paper actually cost. So we used to get the Sunday paper just to get the coupons. And then they switched it to the Shabbos edition. So I remember calling up the Record and asking them, like, is there a way to arrange, is there any way for the Shomer Shabbos people to get their coupons in the Sunday edition? I mean, they thought I was a So didn't work. So then I think that was the time that you did that, some of that research for me. Okay. Anyway, back to the story. The most basic question that permeates all of Maaseh Shabbos Shailos, which may be another extenuating circumstance in some of the cases that we've been talking about before, is that, let's say when a Jew does malacha for you on Shabbos, and we say there are certain kenosos, there are certain problems, there are certain after the fashion that let's use, is that talking about malacha that was done b'mezid, or is that even talking about malacha that was done b'shogeg? And if the answer to that question would be it's only b'mezid and not b'shogeg, that would be matter a lot of things. A lot of these people who are carrying and driving, a lot of them don't know anything about Shabbos. So what would the din be? When does this kenas / the Torah / nenet, whatever the case may be, does this apply only b'mezid even b'shogeg? So this was actually a machlokes ha-tanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Meir's view was that the entire prohibition against at least from a Jew doing malacha on Shabbos only applies if a mavashal b'mezid. Mavashal b'shogeg, yechol b'bayad. If a Jew by mistake he forgot it was Shabbos, never knew it was Shabbos, never knew how to cook on Shabbos, whatever it is, made a mistake and did a malacha on the rice, it doesn't matter, it's still okay because none of this applies b'shogeg for one of two reasons. Either Rashi's view that it's based on being nenem and meisah Shabbos, and somehow a malacha that's not b'shogeg is not really called being nenem and meisah, it's not an issah Shabbos, it was b'shogeg, so it didn't really register as a meisah veira. Or according to Tosfos, that it's b'toras kenas, so therefore l'konsa shogeg to meisah. So Rabbi Meir was of the opinion that the kenas was only made for the person who violated b'meisah, not for the person who violated b'shogeg. So that was the view of Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with me. He says, no, the issah applies even b'shogeg, again, either according to Rashi, because shogeg is also called a baisa avera, or because it's very tricky, very slippery slope. If we tell people b'shogeg, there's no kenas, and then next thing you know, the mezid guys get that he was a shogeg, so it's going to be very hard to monitor that. So therefore, we have a rule, according to some opinions, kansu shogeg up to mezid. Whenever there's a penalty put in, the penalty applies equally to shogeg as well as to mezid. So bottom line, what's the answer? What's the halacha? Do we follow Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda? So if we follow the regular rules of psak, we would be forced to follow Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says in the fourth breath of Erevin, you always follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda. However, what can trump that rule is if the Gemara trumps it explicitly. The Gemara quotes Amoraim who say this particular case is an exception to the rule, so that breaks all the rules in terms of Psal. So does the Gemara say that or not? Depends on how you read the Gemara. So the Gemara tells us a very, very strange conclusion to the story. Should you follow Rabbi Meir, should you follow Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara quotes in Maaseh Eschul that Rav used to have the following split Psal. When he would speak to his Talmidim, he would pass him one way, and he would pass, when he would speak to the Balabatim, to the Avonam, he would speak a different language. Everyone here guesses Talmidim and Balabatim, so we'll try to speak on both sides of the equation. So the Gemara says, Ki roi rav l'tamide. When he would tell his Talmidim what the halacha is, he would be makil. He would tell him that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir, because that's the emesah halacha, that the shogeg is okay. Ki moi rav to others, when the Balabatim would ask him the shayla, he would always tell him the chumra. He would tell him Rabbi Yehuda's version. Why is that? Why is he more machmer for the people rather than for the Talmidim? So the Gemara says it's very simple, because the Talmidim, he was talking to, big Yirei Shemayim, the Mechomim, they were sitting and learning, Yom Valayla. So he knew that he could tell them what the Igra Din is, and they're not going to be Mezalzel and Isurim. He said he's talking to everybody. You publish a Psach, you publicize a Psach on the internet for everybody. You have to be more machmer, because if you're not going to be more machmer, if you give a kula, they'll take 100 kulas. It's like Marshall Law Devadamba. Anyone who knows about the English Svarim that are usually published today, very often there's a discrepancy between what it says on the top and what it says the footnotes on the bottom. It says on the top are usually all the chumras, and if you want the coolers, you have to read all the footnotes. Why? So this Svarim is very simple. That anyone who's looking for a quick fix, you know, they want a quick, you know, quick tzach, tell me, Rabbi, quick, what do I do? So you can't always present all the coolers on top, because if you give a cooler, then a guy's going to extrapolate next cooler. For the person who's going to bother reading every last footnote, you want a cooler, then you have to figure out, you know, you have to learn all the lumbus of the footnotes. But for the hamonam, to tell everybody, you have to sometimes earn the side of caution. You have to be a little bit more careful. You have to up the ante a little bit. So that's what the Gemara says. That's what Rav used to do. You pass it one way for the Tamidim and another way for the Bava. And hopefully no one would ever find out about that. And that's what the Gemara says. That was Rav's pshat was. So the Rishonim have machlokes, so therefore what? So now what? So where does that leave us? So the Tosfos writes, well, that leaves us as follows. That means the Ikra din is like Rabbi Meir. If the din wasn't like Rabbi Meir, then he would have no right to tell a Tamidim to be Bekel. So push comes to shove, Rav held like Rabbi Meir. So Tosfos writes, if Rav paskin like Rabbi Meir, so that's how we paskin. We're all Tamidim Chum. We're the Balei Tosfos. We're okay. We're fine. We have some Balabatim around. So Tosfos seemed to be of the opinion, our Balabatim, they're not as ignorant as Rav's Balabatim. Rav's was talking to real Amir Oritz, the real McCoy. Some of Rav's Balabatim was such Amir Oritz. The Gemara tells us a story that when Rav came to Bavel, Rav used to be in there, so they arrived in Bavel. So he overheard a conversation between two religious women in the marketplace. They were Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, to the best of their knowledge. They were trading recipes. And one of the recipes they were trading was, oh, if you mix this piece of meat, you take this butter, you take this cheese, and you make it, it's delicious. So he said, what? What's going on? It's not part of it. It wasn't, what's the new kind of meat out there? It's not that. It wasn't that. And it's not soy milk. They were trading recipes for Boston B'cholov. And he came to the realization that they didn't even know that. They were so innocent. They were trying. The Nebuch, they were so far removed from Torah. They were such amiratzim in Bavel. When Rav arrived in Bavel, there's such amiratzim that he realized that they didn't even know what it meant to keep a kosher kitchen. The Pasha had no idea what it means that you're not allowed to mix between meat together. They were trying, but the Mamish had no clue what to do. So when Rav realized how low the level of learning was, again, I'm not saying all Bavel, places in Bavel, out in the hick towns, out on the farm somewhere. So he realized, the Gemara said, he had to teach them mamash from scratch. They had to make a lot of chumras. They had to make certain gzeiras to get them back up to the right approach. So Tosfos writes that we're not so bad. We're not such amaratzim. We know you're not allowed to cook and meet and milk together. We know a little bit about Shabbos. We know a little bit about things. So therefore, we're allowed to be like the Tamidim of Rav. We're allowed to follow the standards of the Tamidim of Rav. And therefore, we're allowed to follow the view of Rabbi Meir, that whatever Maaseh Shabbos has done with Shagig, that's okay, that's fine. Everything is okay, nothing to worry about whatsoever. And other Rishayim, the Rif, and the Ram, and the Ramban, right? No. You see that Rav would not give public policy unless he would follow Rabbi Yehuda. He would publicize on his website, you have to follow Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So the other Rishayim say, well, who are we? We're Rav's Tamidim. We're on the level, we're somewhere in the middle. We're not as great as Rav's Tamidim. We're not as bad as Rav Balabatim. We are Klai Sol today, somewhere in the middle. So both the Rishonim, many of the Rishonim say that we have to be machmir, we have to earn this out of caution. Therefore, even in our own lives, we have to follow the view of Rabbi Yehuda, finish, end of discussion. And then there are others who say that, Ramban argues, that maybe we don't even pass it like Rav. Maybe we pass it like Rabbi Yehuda Lagamre, Mikra Din, not just as a Chumrah. So when all the dust settles, how do we pass in Halacha? Depends who you ask. So in Shulchan Aruch is Machmir, so Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah doesn't argue. Shulchan Aruch and Simon should do the test with the beginning of Dinim, all the Dinim that Shabbos appear. So Shulchan Aruch quotes straight out of Rabbi Yehuda's book that even B'Shagig we have a very real problem, that you have to refrain from Maaseh Shabbos, even if it was done B'Shagig. And Vilna Gaon says that he thinks that the Ikra Din is like Tosfos. The Ikra Din, the Halacha follows Tosfos, and therefore Maaseh Shabbos wouldn't apply in a situation of Shagig. So that's a big machlokes, that's a huge machlokes. 99% of our Maaseh Shabbos are Shagig. Who are Machal Shabbos but Maaseh B'Zayin? Come on, we don't have any Rishonim today. Amaratzim, we have a lot of Rishonim. There are very few Rishonim today. It used to say in Europe that there are no more Apikorsim anymore. We have loads of Amaratzim, but very, very few Apikorsim. To be an Apikorsim, you have to really know how to learn. You have to know what you're arguing with. A guy doesn't know anything. Like today, a guy writes a silly article about some Narishkeit, some foolishness. He's not an Apikorsim. He's not an Amoritz. Amoritz Gomer. He's an Amoritz Deraisa. It's not even Amoritz Deravon. He's a real Amoritz, the Choladeus. So that's what the post can point out. The Bizman Azad, he said, most people are in such a mesidim, we don't have so many terrible Rishonim today. He said, we have a lot of people who don't know the details. So according to the Gemara, everything's okay. Whatever's done b'shagin, everything is Arme Mutter, everything is Tim Shnishpa, everything is Arme Mutter, everything is Mutter. And the Shulchan doesn't say that. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that we try to follow what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's the view of the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rabban, and Rova Rishonim. But if you're really stuck, you're allowed to rely on the Gemara. You're allowed to rely on Tosfos. So that's another thing to keep in mind, in the back of our minds, that if you have these extenuating circumstances, even though Malacha D'Oraisa was done, if it was really done b'shagig, then it's going to be okay.
What if it's done b'heter, as like, you know, someone cooks for someone who's sick?
Oh, that's a whole other story. That's the next thing you've got to come back and do it for them. No. That's a whole other story. Then you have a further shaila, which is a very, very important shaila, and that's a question of the poskim. What if the Isser involved was not even a Dera'is in the first place? What if the person only did a Derabonim? So the Jew went in and he violated Nisah Derabonim. Is there any Maisa Shabbos at all? As B'shogeg, to make matters even better. So many, many Acharonim have Raya's from Rambam, from Sugyas, that B'shogeg and Derabonim, that's for sure. Okay. Then there's nothing to worry about whatsoever. Not everyone agrees to that. They're already most of the Acharonim are making. So very, very often, a lot of the Yisurim that are involved are Yisurim Derabonim. Not always, they're Yisurim Derabonim sometimes, but a lot of Yisurim are Yisurim Derabonim. So that's why when the push comes to shove today, very, very often Maaseh Shabbos Shaila is boiled down to a few series of different kulas. Very often we'll ask the question, is it Maaseh the Shogeg? It's usually going to be Shogeg. Was it the Rais of the Rabbanim? Very often it's going to be the Rabbanim. Did it change the item or not? That's going to be one other factor. So very often the Rav will be mocked for certain Maaseh Shabbos Shailas based on a combination of those factors. Or we mentioned last week that if somebody holds its mutter, the Magen Avraham says, if there's a legitimate sheet that holds, you're allowed to do it, even though most didn't do that way. But the Yevid, you're allowed to rely on that sheet also. So you have a lot of different reasons to end up being makil on ex post facto Maaseh Shabbos Shailas. You have to put together all these things into the equation to try to come out whether it's going to be permissible or not. But the Isser Maaseh Shabbos, in theory, still exists. In practice, it still exists. But you have to ask yourself all these questions. Is it Shogeg Maaseh? Did I say the Rabbanan? Was it Maaseh done? Not a Maaseh done. Whether we're going to paskil a Maaseh that after the fact one's not permitted to be benefited from it. One of the major exceptions to this Rabbanan Kula is going to be mistakes that are done in the realm of heating up food on Shabbos. That's a whole other ball game. And here the Gemara says that a whole bunch of chumers thrown into that particular Isser the Rabbanan, which could cause a lot of problems even after the fact. But we'll have to wait till hopefully down the line. At least from now we'll get to know that specific angle of Maaseh Shabbos. But in terms of the regulars of Maaseh Shabbos, those are pretty much the clone that we spoke about. All right, so next week I won't be on that Sunday. I'm sure the following Sunday.
Question. When you were talking about Maaseh or Shogeg,